Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
She is one of our most successful and celebrated contemporary playwrights here and internationally. Her latest, The Boy, a two-play theatrical event. It's loosely based on three legendary Greek tragedies by Sophocles. And Marina Carr has been looking to the Greeks for a very long time in her work. She's here to discuss. Good morning, Marina.
Good morning, Oliver.
It's being described as a big theatre event, Greek mythology, with Irish accents. Is that what we're going to have?
Well, they're all Irish actors, yes.
Yeah, great. Yeah. How do you describe it, this adaptation of something that's been around for centuries?
Well, how would I describe it? I suppose what you're dealing with, you know, the Oedipus story, the Oedipus myth, if you know anything about them, it's a kind of a destruction of the two biggest taboos really in the world, in a world where very few taboos are left. If you kill your dad and marry your ma, you're kind of...
It's a pretty big one,
I think.
You think since the Greeks were discussing it and yet it's a taboo now, you thought you would have smashed it down by then?
Yeah, it's just one of those things. I suppose it's a huge challenge to try and get your mind around what that would be like to marry your mother and kill your father, marry your son.
Is there anything we can learn today from fellas going around murdering fathers and marrying their mothers?
Is there anything we can learn? Well, you see, it's, you know, they're such big plays and they kind of do the whole human condition, do you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's so much to learn. I think pride is a huge thing. Sin, which we don't really talk about much anymore, but there are a lot of sins committed, or what would have traditionally been called sins. So how you deal with that, how you conduct yourself in the world. And the thing about Oedipus, I think, is he has a bit of a god complex.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a genius complex, to say the least.
The male ego.
The male ego, yep. On absolute display. The raging male ego.
I can't see how that could be connected to anything going
on
in the world today.
No, all our gentle leaders, yes.
Is denial a big kind of theme here as well?
Yeah, well, knowledge and lack of knowledge. It's that kind of, you know, Keats talked about negative capability, you know, where you hold two opposite things in your mind without reaching after fact or reason. And I think Oedipus and Jocasta kind of centres around that story, knowing a thing and not knowing it. Knowing it's your son and not knowing it's your son. Knowing it's your mother, not knowing it's your mother.
That's definitely something like in Irish history, isn't it? The collective denial. Knowing something but refusing to acknowledge it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And in many cases, we literally had someone who knew it was a mother, or you knew a woman had a child, and that with that connection, pretending, you know, there were siblings in the house rather than...
Yeah, or pretending to be the sister rather than the mother. Yeah.
What do you think it's about, all of these plays? What do you think Sophocles was trying to achieve back then?
Well, you're talking circa 500 BC, so they were trying to start a city, you know. It was at a time where I think the old beliefs were dying and there was a lot of pride in the air about who they were and how they were going to define themselves. So they're kind of foundation myths and they're kind of salutary tales in a way. So they believed, you know, Oedipus has a line, man is the measure of all things. You know, it's not the gods anymore, we decide.
Right.
Which you could apply to, you know, a lot of very secular societies today. Mm-hmm. And where we lie within faith and the how we posit ourselves against eternity. So you've the temporal and the eternal, and wherever your set of beliefs lie, I think Oedipus is all about that. Oedipus Rex, Oedipus the Colonist, and Antigone. It's all about what you believe and how you position yourself and how you behave according to those beliefs. So if you believe you are the measure of all things, there's no stopping you, really.
This sounds so like today, doesn't
yes.
it? That the kind of loss of faith.
Yeah.
And
no checks and balances on behaviours.
We've ended up with the kind of titans who feel...
Yeah.
They have correct in feeling that they have massive influence over the world.
Yeah.
Much bigger than governments now.
Yeah. I suppose it has never really changed, though, has it? They've always been there. But it seems like something has been unleashed.
It was quietly done, wasn't it? Whereas now they're openly saying we're in charge.
Yeah, yeah. And there's no apology. And there's no one reigning reining it all in.
Does truth matter in your plays here as well?
Truth, yes. I mean, but how do you describe truth? It's different for us all, isn't
That's
it?
A kind of a concept that's really falling apart before our eyes for probably the first time since the printing press, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. It's, it is, I mean, they're very strange times we live in. But then, like, you read the myths and you read your classics and you realise this has kind of always been going on. Maybe we just have more information about it now. You know, we have instant information now. Whereas before, we'd take weeks and months to learn about a war, to learn about some despot.
We could pore over it, think about it. And also the interest in it lasted longer, didn't it? It's easier to sweep something aside and normalise something that was
completely
incredible.
Yeah, we're saturated with knowledge or information.
Overwhelmed. Was Greek mythology present in your childhood growing up in County Offaly?
It was, in the Ladybird books, yes. In my mother's school. Yeah, and the Irish myths as well. You know, she loved history, she loved mythology. So we would have had that in the school from a very young age, and she would have taught. She taught me, she taught all of us.
How do they sit next to each other, by the way, the Irish myths and legends versus the Greeks?
I mean, they're kind of, a lot of them are retellings of the Greek myths, you know. So there's a huge connection, I think, between the Greek and the Irish. You know, American, who, you know, the Song of American, the first kind of song of creation. I mean, he was from a Greek colony.
Right.
You know, and he came here and he got rid of the fair bullock and the Thuagidanon and all of that. But he was of Greek extraction. So, I mean, we're seafaring, we're an island people, mm-hmm. and the traffic across the Mediterranean and the Atlantic was huge. All these stories were travelling around.
The place that you grew up in was Gortnamona.
That's right, Field of the Bog.
So literal for Offaly, isn't it?
Yeah, literally, yeah.
What was that place like?
Very beautiful. Very rural, very awfully, how can I put it, you know.
I'd imagine these summery mornings would remind you a lot. And, or maybe there's a longing for that kind of buzz that you get in quiet fields in Offaly.
Dragonflies on the lake. And, you know, this is usually the Midlands are the hottest when the hot weather comes.
Very hot at the moment.
Yeah.
What was the lake called?
Palace Lake.
And was it, could you do recreation in those days on the lake, or was
Oh, yeah, swim. So we used to swim, and just play around the lake and count the swans and, throw stones into the lake, splash each other, diving and ducking and all of that.
So it was a rural upbringing, but your parents had kind of urban jobs.
Well, my father was district court clerk. He was also a playwright. My mother was a teacher. She was the principal of the local national school.
Yeah.
So she was from Connemara and he was from Donegal, so we were blow-ins.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, so, but we had, we were very much taken in by the community, and because she was the local teacher.
Of course.
She knew everyone. Yeah, and she was kind of a force of nature in her own right. You know, she had big dreams and big ideas.
What were they?
Well, she was huge into education, you know. She was great on education, and her former pupils would always come back and visit. I mean, the house, they'd be visiting forever, you
know. Go away, really?
Yeah, and she kept up the relationship with her past pupils and following their lives, and, you know, they'd help her, she'd help them in any way. She was also, she was a fluent Irish speaker, she was a lovely singer. My father was a composer. He was classically trained under Frederick May. You know, so they had a lot going on. He was writing plays and, you know, I would have been brought up to the Abbey at the age of 6 or 7 because he had plays on there, you know, stuff like that. So he had that and the whole rural country bog childhood as well, which was fantastic.
She got
the freedom.
Both.
The freedom of it,
Did your mum, did she write herself?
She wrote a bit in Irish, And she was published, as far as I know, in the Garda Síochána magazine.
Really?
Like, that's the only thing that was ever published by her. Because she was also a woman of her time and she idolised my father, you know. Mm. So he was there's a bit of a genius complex in our house going on as well.
Really?
So we had a genius, we had a genius. So he was on the pedestal.
And she supported the genius.
Oh, absolutely,
At the expense maybe of her own talent?
I think so. I don't want to disparage anything about my father. He was a very gifted man, but it was the times, you know. The woman kind of submitted and, you know, it was all about the man.
If you wanted to be a writer like him, I mean, what avenue could she have had? It was difficult, wasn't
it? Well, I don't know, would it have been permitted?
By whom?
by the household.
Oh,
do you
really?
Know?
Do you
yeah,
think so?
Because the ego was quite huge. And, you know, it kind of, it took the air, I think. It took the air.
Wow, that's kind of quite profound itself.
Well, I don't know, Sarah, and it's, you know, they had a wonderful relationship in many ways. But I think a lot of it was her absolute adoration of him. And that built him up.
Why was she publishing the Garda magazine, by the way, principal of it?
Because her dad was a sergeant. That's how we ended up in Offaly.
The mail collection.
Yeah,
was there.
Because he was a sergeant down in Clonisslea in County Leash in those days. And she graduated from Carysfort and she was doing her BA by night in UCD. And she was she'd met my father up here and they were having a great romance. And then my grandfather was a widower very young and he got her a job in Gartnamoan in the school.
Oh, right.
And she went down, the dutiful daughter, to live in the wilds of Offaly and to teach. And my father followed her down. And that's how we ended up. But they were always talking, will we ever get back west or will we ever get back to Donegal? We ever, you know, it's been
where
a bit
they
like,
were pining for it all the time. Did they think
yeah,
they were going to go
three
back?
Three sisters, we ever get back to Moscow? It was that kind of thing. Okay. Even though they, you know, even though the life was good and they had all of us and sure they couldn't afford to go anywhere with six kids, you know.
They must have had idyllic childhoods then that maybe they wanted to return to something that.
Yeah, well, I think the sea was what they missed.
Oh, yes, you would.
Yeah. Always talking about the sea. And so my mother built this house in Palace Lake. Beautiful site. Because it was water. She wanted water. And the lake was the next best thing in the Midlands. There's no sea in the Midlands.
That's
you know?
Amazing, yeah. So she could gaze out and imagine the Atlantic.
Look at the water.
Yeah. She died quite young, didn't she?
She died in her early 40s, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
What age were you at that stage?
17. I was doing my Leaving Cert.
Devastating.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. For all of us, yeah. But, you know, it's so long ago and... You know, it's 43 years ago. So they fade on you, you know. And then there'll be days, you know, you'll be spaced and whatever and the images of them will come back so vividly.
Yeah.
And suddenly they're vital and they're vital in your memory. And Virginia Woolf has a great line about Mrs. Ramsay, you know, into the lighthouse. She's talking about Mrs. Ramsay. And she says, Lily Briscoe says, you know, what you said has never left. You know, so that memory that you keep of them and it does sustain you because it's very strange to be at the top of the mountain. Like both my parents are dead now, so there's no one ahead of you.
That's
you know,
right,
you're the next one that's going to be pushed off the cliff.
Does it sustain you when you remember or is there a little bit of a pain there?
Well, it's both, you know, but it's you think of how beautiful they were and you think of how gifted they were. And then because you can see another person's life much more clearly than you can see your own, you can see where maybe a couple of wrong turns were taken, you know?
Yeah.
The way you can never see with your own life.
Of course.
But you can see it with other people's. And when you see it with your parents, you think, I think all that potential, you know? So the way my mother sustained my father when she died, I mean, just the wind was out of his sails.
Oh, really, was it?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he ever came back from that. Creatively, you know.
Wow.
So
were you writing as a child? In
I
that
was.
House?
We were all. We had the theatre in the shed on top of did the turf. We did. We had all these murder, all these vicious plays where people were drowned and boiled alive and crucified and the whole world.
Normal children's fair, really.
Normal children's fair. Yeah.
And were you reading plays and performing them in the shed? Or were you making up your own versions?
Oh, we were writing our own plays.
Oh, were you
in headline copies? Yeah, yeah. It was a great competition.
The headline copy.
Yeah, yeah. My eldest brother was kind of in charge and to be allowed write a scene or a play or whatever you call it. You know, I remember being allowed once. I remember once the headline copy and, you know, screwing my brain to the page to try write some of my brother coming in. You can't do it and just he'll do it and et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Did you keep any copy books, by the way, of your childhood?
I don't think they exist anymore. No.
Was there any other possible career fighting out of you other than writing? Was it just inevitable?
I don't know if it was inevitable. Well, maybe because it was in the blood. It just seemed like a very natural thing, you know, because my father had been writing. Why I chose playwriting as opposed to fiction or poetry, I don't know. I'll never understand that. Maybe a bit in competition with him, a bit influenced by him.
Right. You know, competition with them.
Yeah, and encouraged. Encouraged and, yeah, it was competitive. It was very competitive.
Was it?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And what was the reaction to your success?
He was very proud of me.
Good.
But then there was other things going on as well. Yes.
When is this memoir play coming out?
Oh my God, never, 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 never. I don't know why I'm telling you all this. What is it? How are you getting it out of me?
It's the heat.
Oh God, yeah.
It kind of reminds me of the Cusack family and the big dad who...
Oh, yeah.
They were telling
another
us recently.
Another genius.
Another genius who had to be nurtured in the house. Very, very similar.
Yeah.
Of course, you stayed with the plays all your life. Did you ever think of film?
I love film and I've been asked, but I don't know what I have the patience to be dealing with script editors and, you know...
Producers. Changing the ending.
Yeah, no, and there are some great ones there. Yeah, but you've no control.
What was the moment for you when you said, this is success now, this is what it feels like, I've got it?
I'm still waiting.
Get out of it, come on. Yeah.
Seriously.
You have a shelf full of awards and
I know. But
full houses.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel like that when you're yourself. You still have, you know, you're carrying yourself along with you.
You're battling yourself now.
Yeah, we always are, aren't we? You know.
Mm, that's true. There was a lot of negative press early on. You probably remember this, but most of us probably don't because we know your success now.
Yeah.
What were they shouting about?
Well, I don't know that I probably had no right to be doing what I was doing. It was kind of a boy's game, wasn't it?
Yeah, big time.
Do you know? But then I had a lot of encouragement as well, do you know? Like from colleagues, from the likes of Tom Murphy, from the likes of Tom McIntyre, from the likes of Brian Friel. I mean, they all would have encouraged me at different times and would have taken me aside and talked to me about the work, you know?
Talent won out anyway.
Yeah, well, I don't know, whatever it was, or determination or whatever combination, whatever.
So they were kind of fighting you for other things, but really there was the central theme. What's this woman doing in this field?
Yeah, but then a lot of press criticism is uninformed, you know, and so you have to take it with a grain of salt, even though it hurts at the time. You know, time teaches you. You'll always have your detractors, but you will also have the people who have your back.
Yeah, which was the Tom Murphys and Brian Friels. You're the mentor now, really, aren't you?
I'm the mentor now. God. God help them.
What do you tell them?
Well, I teach playwriting at DCU. So I talk to them. We read plays and I just try to help them unlock, you know, who they are, the voice, because that's it. If you have the voice... If you can find the voice, then the rest will kind of flow.
How will they know when they find the voice?
Well, when it comes naturally to you, you know. When it comes down, the page is written and you hardly know it. That's when you found the voice, I think. But there are many ways. You know, it is a craft. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot you can learn. So we would spend a lot of time reading plays and just looking at structure, looking at character and what makes a great character, what makes a weak character. What's your entry point into a scene? What's your exit point? How many acts? How many scenes per act? Are you going to have an interval? I mean, all these basic things, you know, that don't occur to people until you point it out. And it's so simple then.
Does it all look like?
Yeah. Yeah. The architecture of your page. You know, it's as basic as
that. I love how it seems you have no idea how cool it must be for those students to be taught by Marina Carr.
Well, we've great all time.
That's the Offaly and Connemara, I'd say. Yeah,
well, I hope so. I hope they learn something from me because I learn from them as well. Do you know, because these are conversations.
And you're still writing and working away.
Yeah.
I thought there was humility in Donegal, but I think you've burst that bubble this morning. Your family life now, by the way, in your own house.
So there are four kids. Well, the youngest has done the Leaving Cert now. So
always busy.
We're waiting for the results on that. And the other three are all studying. So,
Do they go to your plays?
They do. And they're very proud of me. And they're very supportive.
Brilliant. It's nice to have. And there's no ego allowed in the household.
None whatsoever.
But look, we can get to enjoy your work now. The Boy, a two-play theatrical event by Marina Carr, will open at the Abbey Theatre on the 15th of September until the 1st of November. A good long run.
Yes.
And abbeytheatre.ie is the place to get tickets, a beautiful room to sit in, and we look forward to doing so. Marina Carr, thank you so much.
Thank you, Oliver.
And good luck now in the heat.
Thanks.
So many lovely messages from Marina Carr, and somebody saying they're still moved by seeing her play Portia Coughlin in the Abbey Theatre a couple of years ago. That's from Rory in County Clare. And there's loads more besides. I'll give them, I'll let Marina know because I'm going to chat to her again after this. But we've